Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello and welcome to episode 77 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Mino.
And I'm Ankita.
And this week we have a very interesting episode because we are going to talk about quote unquote, I was going to say hashtag. This is how the internet has ruined me. I was going to say hashtag. We're going to talk about quote unquote English medicine. And the reason we want to talk about this is because Ankita and I have had a lot of discussions about how our parents raised us and how they raised us looking at medicine from a very, I would say, Ankita, maybe like in a very negative point of view.
And very different. Let's
very
just
different,
go with different.
Yeah, different or negative or however you want to see it. And it has had an impact on at least us and possibly the rest of our generation and how we look at medicine and how we take care of our health. So I think it will be a very interesting topic to discuss, and I'm sure a lot of you listeners have your own stories to tell us as well.
And before we get into that, though, we want to celebrate a small milestone. In 2 days from now, that is if you're listening on a Thursday, we will be celebrating 2 years of Desi Outsiders, and that's wow, that's just unbelievable that this project started 2 years ago. And I feel like we've come full circle because we started off, it was just myself and Meenal, like we like to brand ourselves as two Desi girls living in the UK now because Meenal's going to move to the UK, discussing Desi culture and society from an outsider's lens. We started out by sharing our own personal anecdotes and stories, and then we moved on to bringing other guests onto the show so that we could share their stories. And now we've come to a point where it's becoming near impossible for us to do that. So we're back to sharing our own personal stories. So it's like come full circle, and I'm very happy. I'm very happy that this project is here even 2 years later, and we're still having fun doing what we do.
I think, Ankita, that one thing that I realized today was that when we had decided that we're recording on a Sunday, there was so little pressure on me to to just sit down and record, and it makes things so much more enjoyable. And it reminds me of the very first few episodes where we sat down with our microphones, and that, you know, that adrenaline that I had to record, because it got to a point, as we'd mentioned in the previous episode, where I just couldn't, you couldn't keep up and I couldn't keep up, and it just became like another chore. So I'm really grateful to be here, and we're only here because of you listeners who stay tuned and follow us. And we are getting a lot of good feedback and a lot of great positive feedback from our new change and our reset that we've had on this year Outsiders. So thank you to everybody who's tuned in. And
yeah, it's been quite a mixed response, but I feel like an overwhelming majority of you guys have come back saying, yay, we had missed the conversations between just the two of you. We enjoy your sense of humor for some
people
reason.
People think I'm actually funny.
I know, so. Right? This is awkward.
But I think, Ankita, before we move on to talking about the main topic of today, I think it would be nice to share with our listeners some personal achievements, maybe, or what you think you've learned with Desi Outsiders and what I think I've learned. And I think it would be nice to share with our audience because it will help them be part of our journey. And I want everybody to be part of this podcast journey. So maybe you can start and tell us, what have you learned from Desi Outsiders in the last 2 years?
I feel like, and this is me doing a hashtag flashback Friday, hashtag throwback Thursday to our appearance on the BBC Asian Network, where one of the things that we were asked was, what's next for the AC Outsiders? And we said, we don't know. And to be fair, it's been exactly 1 year since that appearance at BBC Asian Network. And we said that the only thing we know for sure is that we're open to change. We're open to do whatever it takes for us to make this, you know, project continue to be fun. And I know for sure that we're continuing to have fun doing this. So I think my biggest learning process has been that you need to be open to change, and change is good, and perseverance is good as well. Obviously,
I would add to that as well, and I think that it's important for people to understand that everyone has a goal in their life, and people start projects and ventures with one goal. And our goal was to put light and shed light on stories that are not told at home, or be part of a conversation, or start a conversation, and that was our goal. But the goal, when we have a goal in our lives for anything that we do, we just have to be flexible with it. And that's what we've been. We've been very flexible. And we have had a lot of conversations where we've sat down and said, and we've been very honest. And I think that's really helped us. When we've been very honest with each other. I mean, there have been times when we've recorded episodes and I remember Shane and Ankita saying, Mil, you know, you need to try and do this instead. And I've taken it with a very positive, in a very positive way, because I know I'm learning. And that's how I looked at it. I didn't look at it as, why is Ankita, you know, finding all these faults? I never looked at it like that. And
how,
I think,
how else can a partnership work out?
Exactly. So I think that every goal that you have in life has to be flexible. And
so I just also want to mention that sometimes we've had episodes where we've interviewed a guest, and Neil and I have had a very honest heart-to-heart after the interview, immediately after the interview, saying, this is not good content. I mean, we interviewed this person and this sounded like a press release for them as opposed to a story we want to share. And we have taken, as painful as it sounds, we have taken steps to not release that episode only because we felt like it didn't align with our values. And having that value system that doesn't change throughout the process as well, that remains constant as well.
And
that helps.
I'm very grateful to be here, and I really hope that I continue to learn. And Ankita and Shane have been very great to work with, and it's been a big life-changing project for me. And I really hope that as much as it's changed our lives, it can change yours in some way or another.
So now I think we're at that point in the episode where I apologize to Shane for all of the croaking noises that I'll make throughout this episode, all the heavy breathing I'm going to be doing, not because I'm pregnant or anything, but
That
will make you happy.
Oh my God, that will make me so... I would move to Scotland for 9 months just to take care of you.
Oh God. Yeah, who made you a doctor? God. So yeah, speaking of doctors as well, that's a good segue into what we were going to say. I'm sick, and this is the weirdest sickness I've had till date, because I don't remember another time when I woke up completely fine. I walked to work. I know it's a Sunday, but then like I walked to work, I was happy, I was energetic. And then halfway through the day, I started feeling horrible body aches. I was feeling cold and I was shivering, so I sat next to a radiator at full blast, 28 degrees. And I just knew that I was so weak that I probably wouldn't even be able to walk back home. And I had to call in sick for tomorrow. But this is the weirdest sickness I've had because my throat doesn't hurt. Usually when you have some sort of a flu, your throat starts to hurt, and then your sinuses, everything just starts getting blocked. But I have none of that. I just have the worst body ache, headache, and I'm cold. I'm cold and shivering. Obviously, to discuss this, I called my in-house doctor. I video called her because who cares about her routine and her life, right? I just called her. I'm talking about Meenal, if you hadn't guessed already.
And can we address me as Dr. Viz now?
Okay, I just called Dr. Viz because I had to ask her what the fuck was going on with me.
So I think that Ankita, I don't know if Ankita, you mentioned this in the podcast before, but usually I would just tell you to take paracetamol.
Always, yeah.
Because I don't really know what I'm talking about half the time. I'm just kidding. I know what I'm talking about.
That's, you're like, paracetamol will fix everything.
When I was younger, Ankita, and I had these same symptoms. So just to let all our listeners know, I still don't know what's wrong with Ankita. I've told her to monitor her symptoms and let me know.
Oh, by the way, there's a rash as well that we didn't mention. I feel like I shouldn't be sharing all of my symptoms on a podcast.
This is hashtag confidentiality issue. So let's just keep it there. I still don't know what's wrong with you.
So you know, it's not a rash in a weird place. It's very visible. Okay.
I don't want people to like, shame.
Oh my God, no. I don't want people.
I hope your parents are not listening to this one.
Of course they're listening. Oh, by the way, my parents have no idea that I'm sick, and I'm probably not going to tell them because they're going to freak out. So they're going to listen to this episode
through this podcast.
Through this podcast, as usual. Yeah.
So I told Ankita to take paracetamol. Now, when I was a kid, and I woke up with a fever, tummy ache, I'm pretty sure I had 100% attendance in school because my mom always just shoved away my feelings and how ill I actually was.
And hashtag scarred.
Okay, let's stop hashtagging. Maybe that's why I became a doctor.
Yeah, you're like, let me fix this shit once and for all. Let me save those kids who don't need to go to school.
But I remember my mom never gave me medicine. My mom never gave me paracetamol. We had medicines at home, but it was really just in urgent cases. And my mom, for some reason, just drilled into our heads that taking medicines was bad, and you can only cure yourself with haldi, with dood, with warm milk, and all of this stuff. And of course, I'm not saying that doesn't work. It does work. But my mom just refused to give me any chemicals to put in my body because she thought it was toxic.
Yeah.
So I don't know why she thought that. And I think it's just this frame of mind that people... I don't want to generalize that people have this in India, but I see it a lot in India. That's what I'm trying to say. I see a lot in India that people don't want to give any chemical medication, and they would rather stick to natural or herbal ingredients
or remedies. Yeah.
And I have a very big problem with this because as a doctor, as much as the pharmaceutical industry is corrupt in its own ways, I still believe that the pharmaceutical industry does have a lot of good medicines to help you, and that's why it exists. So why are people scared to take paracetamol? I remember having period pains, and I suffered for years because I thought taking paracetamol, ibuprofen, was a bad thing. And it was only when I went to university that I started taking it because nobody was monitoring my intake that I realized that, oh my goodness, I could have saved all these years of pain.
Yeah, it was not exactly the same for me growing up because the weird thing with my home was that there was a lot of self-medication happening, i.e. my dad used to self-medicate and also medicate all of us, so I hardly ever went to a doctor. And my dad was, he was never one to give me like herbal remedies or anything. I feel like he was just so intelligent and so good at drawing and everything. He was going to become a doctor, but then, you know, life happened and he as a teenager made the decision to go into the armed forces instead. But he always has that knack for medicine and everything. So whenever there's something going on, one of us is sick, my dad would just be the one medicating us. But more often than not, when the initial like basic symptoms would show up, like a mild throat ache or a little bit of sniffles or whatever, my parents would immediately say, there's no need for chemicals and medication immediately. You can do a saline gargle. We'll give you a little bit of honey. And
my mom always put warm water and salt.
Yeah, yeah. And so that actually works though. Saline gargle is amazing for throats.
I don't know the science behind that though, and I do question it does work. I'm not saying that it hasn't worked. It's worked for me as well.
Okay,
but I don't know how that reduces inflammation and how that helps. Maybe
I think
someone...
it just goes and nukes some of the germs in your throat, right? And not all the germs in your system. So just it gives you relief from throat ache when it's like hurting and you can't speak. So you saline gargle would do that. But initial stages when we have something, they used to try to treat it with just natural remedies. And only when the symptoms got really worse would we have a paracetamol. And then there was also this myth. I don't know. So I want to ask you if this is a myth or not. But there was this myth that was regurgitated to us that if you have too much paracetamol, if you have paracetamol when your symptoms are not that severe, then it'll be like the boy who called wolf. Because when you actually fall sick, it won't work on your body. So that was some sort of fear that was driven into almost all the kids that I grew up with. And I met one of my colleagues here who's also from India. She was working with me today, and she was also like, Ankita, you had one paracetamol, don't have another one for like another four hours or something. You don't, like, so she also has that mentality, which I totally get, because I used to believe in that myself. It's like a religion. You're indoctrinated with it from the time you're a child. You're told, oh my God, this is bad. If you don't do this, or you will die. Or if you do this, you will die. So it's just a fear that is inculcated in us.
So I just want to confirm that I have read that when you take, when you gargle with salt water, what happens is that the salt actually pulls water out from the infected area. And as it's pulling water out, it's pulling the virus along with it as well. Oh. And that's what helps you wash it out.
Science, bitch.
So there you go. It took me, 4 minutes to... If I had faster internet connection, I would have done it in 30 seconds. But, but you see, I totally understand what you're saying. And I am sure, I know that I've said stupid things in my life as well. And people have said, why are you saying that? And I've said, because my mom said that. Obviously, after I said it out loud, I realized how stupid I sounded. But now I feel as much more, maybe intelligent, or whatever word you want to use, much more... well-read generation.
Well-rounded human beings.
We are capable of checking these things up and checking these things on the internet. So you know when we have our periods, I don't know what your mom has told you about periods and exercise, but when you have your periods, we are told that exercising helps. It allows the muscles to relax, because that's where your period pains are and your cramps are. They're all muscle cramps and muscle twitches. So when you exercise, not heavy exercise, a light exercise, a walk or whatever, it helps to reduce the pain. Now, when I was a kid and I was doing a lot of sports, my mom said, Meal, stop doing sports because it's going to aggravate your period pains. And that's something my nanny had told my mom. And that's something, you know? I realized throughout the last couple of years that... Yeah, it's great that our parents have passed this information, some good, some bad, whatever. But at some point as adults, we have to put a reset in our brains and say, okay, you have to look at yourselves as people. We have to look at ourselves as people maybe who know nothing about the world. And start from zero and re-educate yourself on everything. Because I think that, Ankita, if something as small as not taking a paracetamol because your mom said or your dad said or your grandmother said is going to make you suffer for the rest of the day, I think it's just a bit... It's a bit ridiculous.
But while we're on the subject, right, because you looked up in WebMD, I'm actually very curious that as a doctor, how reliable do you think internet websites, especially WebMD, is?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that WebMD is the most reliable website, because you can type, I've got a headache, and they might tell you you've got like a brain tumor. So you've got to be careful with these things, of course. But I mean, something I Googled was very simple, gargling with salt.
Yeah.
I think... the best thing to do is when you have very simple symptoms like abdominal pain or headaches or anything, don't look on the internet. Just try and ask yourself very simple questions as a scientist would, or as a medic or a doctor would. Okay, think, if you have an abdominal pain, what have I eaten today? Have I passed stools today? Sorry that I know maybe some of you want to hear that, but that's the truth.
You done tutting today?
Have you passed stools today? Have you eaten something bad today? Is there a pattern with the food that you eat that you're getting pains? Like, is it lactose? Is it milk? And I think a lot of us are clever enough to do that. And if you have a headache, ask yourself the same thing. We know the most common cause of headaches, especially, is dehydration or hunger or stress or lack of sleep. So these are the things you have to ask yourself. Now, something as simple as that, you can figure it out yourself and just check online if you want to. I am going to be very honest here. And as a medical student, the most accurate information I've ever received for my medical knowledge was Wikipedia.
Really?
So obviously, if you can't type abdominal pain on Wikipedia. Maybe you can. I don't know what you'll get. But... for more severe medical symptoms, Google it. If the doctor has diagnosed it, go ahead, Google it. If your doctor says to you, you have a high glucose level, Google what does a high glucose level do? What are the complications?
I remember when my dad was going through his surgery last year, he had multiple blocks in his heart and he had to go through a bypass. I'm not a doctor or a surgeon by any means, but I definitely was Googling, okay, what does this entail? How are they going to go about the surgery?
Fine, and because you received a diagnosis, you received instructions from the doctor, and the doctor said, this is what
but
I'm going to do.
I still could figure out, like, what is the surgery going to be? How long is it going to be? What is the process like? So how do they get to the heart? Yeah. Because these are things that I don't know.
No,
how do they get to the heart?
To be fair, a lot of these things doctors should have told you. Because
because my dad was hospitalized for a really long time leading up to the surgery, so they did come in and answer all of our doubts the day before and told us everything. Yeah. But before that, while I was still in the UK and freaking out, basically, I had the opportunity to, you know, calm myself down by looking up. Okay, what is this process like, and what is an angiogram? Yeah. Because I didn't know that.
My cousin was born with enlarged tonsils, right? And when you have enlarged tonsils, you're going to have breathing problems because it's obstructing your airways to some degree, right? Now, this poor kid had to breathe with his mouth wide open, and he struggled, he snored, and it's not comfortable, man. It's really not comfortable for a child. And the obvious thing is to remove the tonsils, right?
Yeah.
Now, some idiot doctor went up to my mommy and said, to my aunt, and said, if we remove the tonsils, it's going to stunt his growth.
How?
And that's what? Total bullshit. But this was only 17 years ago. It's not like my aunt could have said, okay, let me Google it. And let me check.
Yeah.
But it's also, so all of these things that we're talking about, this whole English medicine thing, yes, it is a problem because we listen to our parents, and it's a problem because we've listened to our grandparents, whatever. But I feel like as medical professionals, we have also played a role in this. Because if one doctor says something to you and it just sticks in your head, it can really just stick in your head because you take their word as gospel.
Oh,
and
definitely.
It sticks in their head. And with the same family I'm talking about, one of the grandmothers, she had a leukemia a couple of years ago, and it was a type of leukemia that could only be cured with a bone marrow transplant. Like, there was no other way around it. The first time she had it, she was in remission and she was cured, and then she came back again. And I kept telling them, I said, this was it when I was in my 30s, by the way. So I still wasn't totally aware of what was happening. I still wasn't fully qualified, but I still knew that she needed a bone marrow transplant. And everyone was like, no, let's do Ayurveda medicine. Let's do Ayurveda medicine. I'm asking them, why? What's got into your head? That is just 90% water. And do you know why it's 90% water? Do you know the science behind all this? So Ayurvedic medicine tells us that they use 90% water in a lot of the medications, right? Now they say that water, when it enters our body, actually changes the shape. The molecules actually change shape
inside the body.
And that's how we can affect different parts of your body. So for example, if you're using an Ayurvedic cream or if you're using whatever, it talks about molecular biology and how it changes shape and how it cures you.
I had no idea.
I wish I'd read more up on it because I think this would have been a really interesting podcast about it. But I'm going to put my hands up and say I don't know a lot about it. But these are a few things that I know, that a lot of it is based on water, and a lot of it is based on the theory that when water enters your body, it changes shape, and how it affects the diseased part of your body, the medicine allows it to be cured. Now, I went to an Ayurvedic medicine shop, and they had, because you know tea is a big thing in medicine, like ginger tea or whatever, right? Lemon tea, all of these things help with your sore throat. Even I say it to you, when you say I have a sore throat, I'm like, ginger tea.
Yeah.
So there was a whole shelf, Ankit, though, with about 50 different types of tea from different parts of the Himalayas. And this tea apparently cures Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. I'm just sat there thinking, man, this business idea is genius. Like, you can scam so many people with this.
This, your grandmother is not the first person that I know of who was treated with Ayurveda slash homeopathy for cancer. Mm-hmm. And just so our listeners have some context, the reason why this episode is titled English Medicines and Medication, and the reason we're talking about quote-unquote English medicines, is because where I grew up, at least I will speak for Kerala, all of our pharmacies and medical shops, they advertise themselves as English medicines. And even in Malayalam, right, they say English marinagal, which is basically Western medication, right? Which is completely different from the local medication, homeopathy, Ayurveda, etc. So it's English. I guess it has something to do with the fact that we were a colony for 200 years and the British ruled over us. There's no other explanation for why it's English and not American.
Maybe it's called English medicine because they're trying to brand it as medicine that actually probably works, because maybe people will believe them more if it's English. I don't know.
I don't know why English is synonymous with Western, where I come from. So it's like, most people say, don't have English medicines yet. Don't have English medicines because they're all chemicals and you don't want to nuke your body with that before the symptoms actually surface. In fact, there was, when we had our sister website, feminismindia.com, and we had regular contributors to that website, one of our contributors had a conversation with me where she was unable to contribute because she was sick. And I asked her what happened to her, if she was okay. She told me that she had kidney stones. Obviously, kidney stones are A, painful, B, they can get quite serious, and you can't just ignore kidney stones because it affects your... Well, I don't need to explain why you can't ignore kidney stones. Yeah. So I asked her, oh my God, when did this start? And she said, I've had it for a week. I was like, what did the doctor say? And she said, I haven't been to the doctor because my mother is completely against English medicines. She actually used that term as well. And she was like, my mother is completely against it. And she's giving me a lot of fluids so that I naturally pass the stones. And I was thinking, this poor girl, and she's well educated. She has a master's degree, for crying out loud. Not that a degree proves your level of education, but I'm just saying that she's well educated, well read, and she's still listening to a family member who refuses to give her the help she deserves. With something as serious as kidney stones. So it's all about English medication, English medicines where I'm from. Let me know in emails or comments on social media where you can find us at Desi Outsiders, or you can mail us to mail@desioutsiders.com. Let me know that if you are familiar with the concept of English medication, and whether whichever part of India, Pakistan, or whichever Desi country you're from, if it's called something else, mm-hmm. and if there's this stigma, which I'm pretty sure there is.
I want to also just turn this around a bit and talk about a few things that I've read up on about. So we're talking about now about how people in India term English medicine, and mm-hmm. they're kind of afraid of taking medicine, right? Because they're scared mm-hmm. that something's going to happen.
Yeah.
But that's a very big problem in India, because people want to take Ayurvedic medicine, herbal medicine, and sometimes that just doesn't do the job.
Naturopathy.
Yeah. So the funny thing is that now there are so many new diseases, Ankita. And I'll tell mm-hmm. you why. And that's because we are living... Our species right now are living in a way that our bodies were not made for. Our bodies technically yep. were made for hunting. They were made for survival in jungles. But now we are all digital, right? We're on the phones.
And we're evolving. We're evolving. Yeah.
We are not supposed to have so many radio waves, so many electromagnetic waves around us. Our bodies mm-hmm. are not made for that. And that's why mm-hmm. a lot of cancers are coming up. And this is why a lot of...
Right.
Okay, I'm not saying using a mobile phone is going to give you cancer. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's the only takeaway from this episode, by the way.
A lot of people do say that, and my mom still says that. We still don't have a microwave in our house, by the way, because my mom thinks it's going to give us cancer. But anyway, it does play a role, right? Because our bodies are not used to it. So these are a lot of problems that are coming up, especially in the Western world. Now... The funny thing is that because there are new diseases, and they cannot find specific medication for it, they are turning to herbal medicine and naturopathy. Mm-hmm. So isn't that funny that, in India, basic problems like tonsillitis and abdominal pain, and you're going to Ayurvedic medicine when you can just give them paracetamol or any antibiotic. Yeah. But here now we have new diseases. We don't have the medicine, so we're turning back to...
It's like hopefully whatever we used to have in the past hundreds of years ago is going to come back and save us in some way.
So I think that there are benefits, there are pros and cons of everything. And the I have a lot of problems with the pharmaceutical industry. I'm not going to go into that now. But what I'm just trying to say is that taking one paracetamol, this is the takeaway message, taking two paracetamols, you, as doctors, we're allowed to prescribe two paracetamols every 4 hours.
Every four hours?
And that is very safe.
Because my GP, when I took Shane to the hospital the other day because he had a weird cough that wouldn't go away, and she basically diagnosed it as this weird kind of cough going around the UK where it's going to last for 7 weeks, basically. And now it's gone, thankfully. But she said you can take two paracetamols in a day.
Okay, but that's because I guess the cough wasn't debilitating him and he wasn't in bed.
I know, and he didn't have any other symptoms.
So I'm saying, like, in a hospital environment, you got a sick patient in bed, and they need a painkiller, they need some relief, two paracetamols every 4 or 5 hours is okay.
Yeah.
And my point is that if you're sick, don't torture yourself. Take a bloody paracetamol. Mm-hmm. It's not going to hurt you. I say the same thing to my mom as well. I say the same thing to my dad. Luckily, my mom's understanding it a lot better now. She realizes that taking that allows her to sleep better. And then,
you know, actually, I started taking ibuprofen for any random period pain that I might have. I don't usually get pain, but when I get it, it's bad. And I started taking it only after I met you, because you're like, Ankita, if you're in pain, take an ibuprofen. I take it and there's immediate relief.
I even got to a point where, because sometimes, now not so much, but before I used to get it so bad that ibuprofen wouldn't work. Now so you have ibuprofen and paracetamol, which are just, let's just call them basic painkillers, right? Then you go up the ladder, and as you go up the ladder, you have opioids like morphine and all of these very strong drugs.
Addictive medication.
Yeah. But you can get something called cocodamol, and that's codeine and maybe paracetamol put together. So it's not obviously morphine, but it's not paracetamol either. It's just sort of not even in the middle. It's still closer to paracetamol than it is to morphine, but it's definitely stronger. And I realized that this was available on the shelf, and I realized that it's a stronger painkiller, and I started taking it.
Mina's getting kids addicted to drugs now.
No, but
that's
the takeaway
from this episode.
We've got a lot of takeaways from this
Mina's
episode.
Mina's telling kids about drugs available off the counter.
I started taking that as well, and that helped me. And if my mom had introduced me to this when I was 15, I wouldn't have to suffer through school and be agonizing pain. So it would be really interesting to hear everybody's stories and what they've gone through, because I'm sure that there are a lot of 20, 30-year-olds listening to us right now and probably not too scared to take paracetamol for the same reason.
Yeah, and probably completely disagreeing with us and without any solid proof to back up why they disagree. So we would like to hear that too.
So let us know what you think, and also let us know if this podcast has changed your life.
In my case, I didn't even, like, I obviously didn't know the science behind it, which is probably not the way to go about it either. I didn't speak to Mina about this, but I trusted her with my life. And ever since I basically met you, I would nuke the area that is troubling me. Mm-hmm. So if I had any symptoms, I would actually go in with paracetamol or whatever, Lemsip, which is an amazing thing that we get here in the UK. Mm-hmm. It is a combination of paracetamol and, you know, all of these things that it comes in a sachet, and then you pour some hot but not boiling water into it, and you drink it like tea, and it nukes everything that is causing you discomfort. Mm. So I started doing that without waiting for the symptoms to get worse, only because I decided that life is too short to be miserable for longer just because I'm scared of a medicine.
Yeah, and I also think that we also have to be, I mean, Ankita and I can look at it in a different light because we're in Europe and the health system is much, much more different. But for example, my mother, who is in her late 50s, there are a lot of screening processes that she has to go through, right? She has to get her mammograms, she has to get pap smears, she has to do all of these things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes she refuses to go. And I keep telling her, Mom, The hospital is right there. You have free healthcare. Just go. We can afford paracetamol. We can afford ibuprofen. Just bloody take it. Imagine living a life 200 years ago where this wasn't available, where penicillin antibiotics weren't available. So, yeah, taking too much medicines can be bad. You don't want to get addicted. You don't want to be dependent on them. But also it's okay if there's something better than you. If science beats you and a medicine can help you, that's okay. You don't have to be like a saint. You're not going to win a Nobel Prize for fighting off.
So I think I know the answer to this question, but just to round things up for our listeners, myth or no myth, you need to answer. Taking a paracetamol before the symptoms actually show means that it's like the boy who called wolf.
Myth.
Mythbusters? A few episodes here and there.
Yeah, because if this podcast was a video, we'd have a really cool graphic saying myth busted. Can't do that then. So please let us know what you think. This was a really interesting conversation, Ankita.
I loved it.
I really had a great time recording this. I would have loved to go more into the science and stuff, but I know you're ill and I know that it's getting late. So maybe next time.
And we also feel like, we don't want to make things too technical for you guys either. We just want to give you the advice and take it or leave it.
I'd actually like to know if there are any doctors listening to this who have any contradicting thoughts or similar thoughts or experiences. I'd love to know about your experiences with patients.
My God, Meenal, don't invite this.
I'd love to know.
You know why? Because I don't know if you remember, but I think this was around the time we talked about periods and we said that you can use some products for your vagina to clean it. We have Dr. Sherry Ross, whom we interviewed on our podcast, who advocated for cleaning your vagina with soap.
Specific
vagina soap. But we had a doctor just give us, like, go on a rant about how we were giving people false information because you only need hot water and salt to clean your vagina. I'm not a doctor, but I was thinking salt.
Yeah, so what happened was that we spoke about this to Sherry Ross, and then some random doctor, who I suppose lived in India, emailed us contradicting everything, saying that
wasn't Sherry Ross, actually. It was an episode that we did about periods.
It was an episode that we did about periods, and then someone came up and tried to say that we were wrong. And which is fine, you can tell us we're wrong, and if we're wrong, we'll put our hands up. But that definitely wasn't right. Pretty sure that is just enough. But anyway,
you feel like Dr. Sherry Ross would disagree with that.
So please let us know what you think. And before you go, we would like to share that we have some great news for you. And I'm sure you've probably all seen it on social media already. But Ankita and I have been very blessed.
And Shane
have been very blessed to have been nominated for the Asian Media Awards. And woo-hoo! This is a very prestigious award that is given to people in their respective fields, whether it's blogging, whether it's TV, whether it's sports. And just for us to be considered to be a finalist means so much to us, because we know that we are on the same stage as a lot of big, big, big names in the UK. And that's really overwhelming, and it really makes us very happy. The event will happen at the end of October, and we will do our very best to attend and
also go live on Instagram or, you know, put up stories about what we're doing. Finally, we meet in October, hopefully, because you start work soon, so you need to figure out your rota and everything. Yeah. But I know that I can get time off work to do this. It's in Manchester. We're going to be traveling down there. And it's been so long since even you and I have met.
Yeah.
It was in May, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a great time. But fortunately, that's always... I'm kidding. It's like we're in a long-distance relationship. And everything is really great when we're apart. But when we meet, it's just like, oh, I'm going to see her again.
So awkward as shit. My God.
But I feel like when we meet, then Shane is a third wheel.
Oh, I know. And then, how do we get rid of him?
Yeah, we've got to figure that out. But thank you guys for bringing us to this point where we are capable of even getting to the stage of being in the Asian Media Awards. And we will keep you updated about, I don't know, I still don't know if it's just a voting process or if the judges decide. I don't know. We don't know.
We will actually find out tomorrow. So today we're recording on Sunday, the 16th of September. On Monday, the 17th, they officially announced the names of the finalists. And I guess that's when we're going to find out what the process is
like. Yeah, and what's happening. So we...
And if there's voting involved, you guys are going to know about it. And hopefully you will vote for us to win in our category.
Yeah, so thank you for listening. And we've mentioned many times in this episode to send us your feedback, so we'll tell you how to do that. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Find us. You can find us at Desi Outsiders.
And to email us your thoughts, feedback, and even suggestions about topics you want us to discuss in the future, you can email us to mail@desioutsiders.com.
So I really enjoyed this episode on Gidla. Really, I know I've said this many times, but it just reminds me about the time I sat with my microphone and the adrenaline rush I had about just talking. And this was a great episode, and I hope we can continue coming up with very interesting topics, and also send us topics you'd like to talk about as well.
You can help us with that. So until next week, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.